This is Phil Farron. And I am driving home. It's Thursday today. It is episode 667, I think, because we made it past the devil's episode. 666. I guess it would be the Antichrist episode. Anyways, so it is chilly here today. We get these little cold snaps, and I know this isn't unusual for people in the north. For us, this is chilly. It's down in the teens. I don't know if it is right now, but it was in the teens last night. It's going to be in the teens again tonight, but then we warm back up to get something that's closer to normal for us for this year, which is, you know, 30s and 40s, 20s. Someplace in there. It's just, it's so funny because you're going along and everything's fine, and it's like, wham! It's in the single digits tonight. Whoa, what? Whoa! So, yeah. Makes life exciting. So, we've had a run of it here now for not quite two full days, but got cold one night, and then we had some precipitation, so we had a little bit of snow, and then you know, it stayed cold all day, so all the snow just kind of got packed down as opposed to melting off. And so now we kind of got that good, you know, hard sheet of ice. Not really sheet of ice, but that hard surface that you don't have a ton of traction with. But anyway, so I will work my way home. I saw one guy coming out of a business as I was driving to the church. I just dropped in for a moment to see if they needed any help because we don't have small groups tonight. And this guy was coming out of a business down onto the road, and it was slick enough. He just kept trying to stop, and his truck just kept coming down the driveway. And I guess out where we live, our gravel drive, it's a little exciting. The blacktop road, Farm Road 167, turns off to the right and falls away. So it's going, you're already going downhill and going off to the right when you're getting close to our driveway. And so usually what I do is just kind of keep my car going straight, and I just go straight across and cut diagonal across anything so I don't have to try to stop on a hill and make a hard turn left. Apparently there was a delivery truck out today that didn't quite navigate that hill correctly and overcompensated and put themselves in the ditch. And then the tow truck got there, and the tow truck was having trouble because now this truck is in the ditch, off to the side, on a curve, going downhill. So I think my wife got caught in there because they were blocking our driveway. And I think my daughter got caught. But yeah, so a little bit of excitement around here. That's certainly nothing like goes on up north. But, you know, keeps life interesting. Life should be interesting over this next week or so. All is going well at work, but we are finishing up the year. They're processing cash receipts. I may be running some harvest this weekend. And we'll get this all closed up, hopefully, and all will go well. You know, you never know till you push the button, and you can't push the button till it's time to push the button. So I'm really attempting in my life to be in whatever moment I am in, and having many things going at the same time, surprisingly enough, has helped with that. And many things going of different flavors. So I have my work, which is very analytical. I have my writing, which is very, it's very literary. It's very language-based, creative, uses one portion of the brain. And then, of course, I have the costume stuff, which is very artsy, crafty, and visual. So having all those things working together, it's really an interesting mix. And I feel like it's done some good things internally. Not just because it appears that I'm bringing joy to people every week, because that's a wonderful, wonderful opportunity to be able to do that. But also because it requires that I be more in the moment with everything I'm working on. And frankly, I've been doing this for almost 2 years now. Here in 2 or 3 months, I will have been doing a costume every week for 2 years. And I've worked on costumes when I was organizing my closet and looking into all the different costumes and all the different things I had done. I told my wife at one point, I said, you know, when I look at all of these crazy costumes that I've put together and all of the mechanics behind them and the engineering, all that, I think, what were you thinking? Yeah. But somehow, got them all done on time. And especially with the costumes, it was all incremental, because there was rarely a time when I could just sit down and focus on that exclusively and only do that. It was 2 hours here and 3 hours there and 1 hour here. And so that's been a really good exercise to learn to say, okay, that's how much I have to do. I've only got 30 minutes. I've only got an hour, but I can get something done. And so it's been fun. Working on the angel costume right now. So I'm working on the mechanized wings. Bought a kit, putting that together. You know, I'll have to make the actual quote-unquote feathers. Some of them will be fake and some of them will be real. But I got all the kit put together last night. Got some actuators coming in to actually make the mechanical wings move. That should be fun. I could have bought an actuator kit from them, but I couldn't use my points with them that I had on my card, and I needed to use my points because these actuators are expensive. So I was able to use my points and not have to actually do that, but that means I do the wiring myself, but that's fine. I think I can figure that out. I've done electronic stuff before. So all that's well, it's all good, the writing is going fine. I'm a few words behind today simply because we had a meal last night with the small groups, and so instead of having a regular evening where I could get 750 words done, I hustled over to the restaurant ahead of time, hunkered down in a corner, and got 440 some odd words done. So, you know, I'm whatever, 300 words down, but I only have 500 words tonight, and so hopefully I get myself caught up tonight. So that's all well. I was just looking around for something to chat about, and I came across this story. I've got another little thing that's percolating, and I've mentioned it to some friends. I'm not sure I've actually talked about it on the podcast, but it is one of those kind of alternate reality, like, what is going on here type things. And it is about the hallucinogenic DMT. I think I have mentioned a few things here and there in the past, but I've been listening to people's stories about being on DMT, and man, there's some interesting stuff in there. You know, it's just very interesting. And frankly, it is not beyond my belief system to think that perhaps God allowed those chemicals to be here as well to introduce people to the idea of something more. Because people need something more. I think it's really fascinating that so many people thought, when we had a few little successes with science, that now we were set up to just say, everything's mechanistic, everything's a machine, your brain is like a computer, there's nothing there, there's no soul in the machine, everything is just mechanistic. Which is amusing when you realize that at every stage, whatever discoveries that we have made, whatever our current model is for how we accomplish work in the world, that we have the tendency then to think, well, since we've figured that out and we can do that, that must be the way the world works. And that's a really interesting discussion and investigation, how that every time we've come up with some new technology, then we think, oh, so the humans are just like that then. I was reading something and they were talking about the fact that when steam engines were first came into vogue, then everybody thought, well, yeah, the animals and stuff, and we're like some kind of steam engine that we're, you know, doing this, that, and the other. And for everything that we believe in, then we try to just redefine everything in terms of that, because obviously that's the answer. And so then when computers came in, of course, then it was, well, the human brain is like a computer. And it's not really. It probably really isn't. That's just the latest thing that's in vogue. I'm on the last approach to my gravel drive now, and the stuff is packed down pretty good. So this is going to be a little exciting, but I'm coming around that little turn I was telling you about. Oh, there's a little spot here, and it looks like they did get the truck out of the way, which is good, and it's fairly dry right here. So, yay. So this maybe isn't going to be necessarily, it's hard to tell, you know, because it's hard to tell whether it's black ice or whatever, but I'm on the gravel drive now. Whoop, whoop. Anyway, so part of this story that we tell ourselves about what the world is like and this embrace of narrative, it's really fascinating to me to think that the thinkers and the movers and the shakers really believed that when they, as Nietzsche would say, killed God, you know, when they eliminated God from the equation, that they really believed that men could just degrade into the idea of everything is mechanized and we're all just machines. Because that doesn't work out very well. And the reason it doesn't is because we are creatures of story. We are creatures of narrative. We need story as human beings. We need symbology. We need ways to plug things into our existence, to make value judgments, as Jordan Peterson would say. I'm going to get my mail. One moment. Oh, nothing in there. Maybe my beloved got it already. We need ways to make sense of our actions and determine if those actions are good or not. We need ways to make sense of the predictions that we make about the world and evaluate those predictions and then decide what we're going to do. The stories are what gives us a framework in life and allows us to function. And it's so fascinating to me that so many movers and shakers and thinkers and intellectuals really thought that once we had a few little successes in science, that we could then abandon all the narratives that had helped build the foundations for all that science, because the early scientists, they were all theists. You know, they all believed in a God. And I have heard other people say, and I would absolutely agree, that the reason that those investigators thought they could make sense of the world was because they thought the world made sense. That it wasn't just a product of all kinds of random mutations and accidental happenings. That there was a designer, and that the designer was personal, and that the designer was willing for the creation to be discoverable. All those things are crucial. They are crucial for people to try to reach out and actually investigate. And it's interesting, I was listening to a couple of guys talk about that whole process, and one of them was the author, I can't remember his name. I hadn't intended to talk about this, but he wrote a book called The Return of the God Hypothesis, and he contends that the Renaissance really had to have this foundation of Christianity, this idea of a designer that whose creations were discoverable, that he was personable. But then beyond all that, that in fact man was fallible. And having this combination of a designer who makes a discoverable universe and men recognize their own fallibility then leads to this process of we will investigate, but others will challenge our hypothesis and they will test and they will determine if we've done this correctly or if there are other explanations. Now, in real life, of course, that doesn't work out quite that good because once the grant proposals start being written, everybody tends to get, you know, this herd thing going where this is the approved theories and money is only going to be awarded for these types of theories, and you get people competing and therefore combative over what's the right theory and not the right theory. But at least in principle, the ideas are there that this is a universe by a designer that is discoverable, that has been made discoverable by us, and that as we are doing the discoveries, we might lead ourselves astray, therefore we need others to help us. And so, according to this guy who wrote the God Hypothesis, that, in fact, were all the things that you needed to cascade in order to get to something like science investigations, such as we purport to have now, with hypothesis and testing and more hypothesis and more testing, as opposed to just people making stuff up. But in addition to all of that, you know, when you throw all that stuff out, then what's left is this striving for truth. How do we figure out what truth is? And in the preponderance of theories, mostly that just are made up out of whole cloth on the internet, if you don't have some anchor, such as a book that purports to tell you the nature of the world, like the Bible, who's to say one theory is better than another? And I don't know that this article that I came across necessarily has to start with a question. I think it could just as easily start with a flat statement. The title of the article was, "Is a New Kind of Religion Forming on the Internet?" Well, yes, of course it is. Because if you do away with the established narratives, those that have helped build the society, those that have helped create science and create everything that we have, and you decide you don't need those anymore, it's not just going to go to everybody going, oh, well, I guess I am just a machine and there's really no point and purpose in this life, and so I'll just churn away in my little cubicle because I'm happy to be a cog in the machine. That's not what's going to happen. What's going to happen is people will chase after other narratives. And they will make up their own narrative. So is a new kind of religion forming on the internet? Yes, it is. And it doesn't have nearly the depth or the backstory or the stability of things that we have abandoned. So, you know, it's a pretty interesting article. I won't read all of it, but just hit some highlights here. It starts out by saying algorithms are surfacing content that combines Christian ideas like prosperity gospel with New Age and non-Western spirituality, along with some conspiracy theories. Quote, "It just doesn't sit right with me," begins a TikToker by the username Evelyn Juarez. "It's a breakdown of the tragedy at Astroworld, the Travis Scott concert in early November, where 8 people died and more than 300 were injured. But the video isn't about what actually happened there. It's about the supposed satanic symbolism of the set. Quote, "They try to tell us something. They just keep ignoring the sign," it reads its caption, followed by the hashtags, hashtag wake up, hashtag witchcraft, hashtag Illuminati. Juarez, a 25-year-old in Dallas, is a typical TikToker, albeit a quite popular one with 1.4 million followers. Many of her videos reveal an interest in true crime and conspiracy theories. The Gabby Petito case, for instance, or the Little Nas Devil Shoes, or the theory that multiple world governments are hiding information about Antarctica. One of her videos from November suggests that a survey sent to Texas residents about the use of electricity for critical health care could signify that, quote, something is coming and the state government knows it. You know, and so it goes on to say her beliefs are reminiscent of many on the internet, people who speak of bad vibes, demonic spirits, or cosmic calamity just looming over the horizon, one that government may be trying to keep secret. Juarez tells me she was raised a Christian, although at age 19 she began to have a more personal relationship with God outside of the organized religion. See, the difficulty here is if you don't have a worldview, a narrative that tells you you have lots of feelings and only some of them are true, and you need to have a mechanism for determining what is true and what is false, if you just like, well, I feel that, so, you know, it must be okay. There's no end to the places that you can get dragged into mentally, things that will just make sense. Juarez identifies as more of a spiritual, as an increasingly number of people, young people, do. Today, Juarez identifies more as spiritual as an increasing number of young people do, many of them working out their ideas in real time online. They may talk about manifesting their dreams and faceless sex traffickers waiting to install tracking devices on women's parked cars. Some might act as almost prophets or shamans, spreading the good word and guiding prospective believers, while others might just lurk in the comments. They might believe all or some of these ideas. Part of the draw of the internet spirituality is that it's a perfectly pick and choosable. It's perfectly pick and choosable. More than anything, they believe in the importance of keeping an open mind to whatever else might be out there. And I got tickled at this part, given the title of the article. I asked Joseph Russo, a professor of anthropology at Wesleyan University, if this loosely related web of beliefs could ever come together to form its own kind of religion. I think it already has, he said. So yeah, I mean, people are looking for narratives and they're latching on to narratives and they're trying to find ways to make sense of the world. And man, I'm telling you, the last couple of years has given us no end of fodder for this. The article goes on to say, you know, the religion of the internet posits questions like, what's the harm in believing and why shouldn't I be prepared for the worst? And the deeper you go, the harder those questions are to answer. Now, there is an answer for those things. What's the harm in believing? Why shouldn't I be prepared for the worst? And the answer comes down to what is the nature and character of your existence here on earth. You know, are you a pure soul? Are you someone who can just intuit and always get it right? Or is there deception and the potential to get things horribly wrong within you? And if you are fallible and there's the potential to get things horribly wrong, maybe you need to approach all of this stuff more, quote unquote, scientifically. And when I use that term, I don't mean scientifically as in you should throw out everything that is not mechanistic. I mean you should ask questions. And you should say, okay, you're making this claim of X. Have you actually evaluated that claim? Have you done any experimentation? Have you tried to apply some data to it? Which obviously we haven't had very good examples of that in the last 2 years, because there's been a whole bunch of stuff that people have just been proclaiming where there is no foundation for it. I mean, I'll grant you, this is January 6th, and I'll grant you that the election of Joe Biden certainly wasn't without its head-scratching moments. Certainly. Okay? But scratching your head over something that doesn't pass the sniff test and having actual real evidence that something occurred are two different things. So it's not really good enough just to spread conspiracy theories around yourselves. If there is a claim, where's the evidence? And if there isn't evidence, maybe you're just being led astray by the destroyer within you. So Russo, the anthropology professor, notes that as social media has become the dominant culture force in our society, ideologies are spreading between people who may have vastly different beliefs and background, but who may show up on each other's feeds and relate in new ways. Quote, "It is a mishmash of different Christian and non-Western beliefs and aesthetics, but this stuff, good and evil, prosperity, all are present in all the systems worldwide and have always been," he says. "Even our most fervent atheists or agnostics are still interested in morality. It's the same idea, different packaging." So they're finding, you know, connections, and then it's kind of getting all piled up on top of each other. And it's just really interesting, because one of the things about conspiracies that makes them so appealing to people, if you really get down to it, why are conspiracy theories so appealing? Why is it so interesting to think that there might be this hidden cabal out there that's controlling our lives? Why is it that that hidden enemy out there, we're thinking, oh, I can discover it and I can look at it? I was watching a TV show months ago about, you know, this young lady who had gone to this murder hotel in L.A. And they did call it the murder hotel because it's way down, not great part of town, and a lot of bad stuff going on there. And she had disappeared and ended up in a water tank, and people were trying to figure out, oh, you know, they're watching the video footage and she's doing this weird kind of gesturing in the elevator, and they were all coming up with all these theories about what she was communicating with somebody and stuff. And, you know, you get farther and farther down into it and you find out she had been off her meds and she had this, that, and there was perhaps a perfectly reasonable explanation for some of it. And then the fact that she was just, you know, murdered by someone else. I mean, but when all you're doing is picking and choosing an investigation and making up things in your mind, and you're not running them against anybody else's opinions, and you're not saying, well, you guys think about this, and, you know, then, yeah, you can get yourself down a rabbit hole really quickly. You know, so this is really fascinating to watch as people are latching on to all of these things. And the article talks about one of the more unfortunate tragedies of humanity is that we don't know everything, and we never will, and therefore are destined to be guided by imperfect and varied systems of belief. Quote, I don't know that we've escaped the religious or sacred model of how to make sense of the world, says Russo. That's the anthropologist. The irony is you have it being espoused by people who are anti-religious. So people who are anti-religious then fall back into a religious and sacred model because we are people of stories. We are people of stories. The article says, though their definitions will change, we will always hold on to warring ideas of good and evil, and those ideas will always have a distinct spiritual bent regardless of where people fall on the spectrum of religiosity, because they deal with questions of why we are all here and what life is for. Quote, this is one TikToker saying this, quote, I believe there's good and evil, Juarez tells me when I ask whether in her videos about the satanic symbol of Astroworld she was speaking literally or figuratively. Quote, if someone is hurting and as a human being you don't take action, that means you lack empathy and that doesn't come from a good place. That to me is demonic. And then the author of the article says that in response, the author said, that makes sense, I tell her. And on 11, I don't quite understand, but nonetheless, it feels it does. So there is this response, there is this yearning within us to the supernatural. There is this yearning within us to make sense of the world. And the problem is there are two drawings in us. There are two forces within us that are within contention of each other. And one force is quiet and calm and moves us towards kindness and generosity and mercy and grace. One force has a quality to it that will set our lives apart, that will give us confidence, that will teach us how to relate to others, how to be gentle to others, and be loving to others. But unfortunately, that voice, that yearning, that drawing in us is quiet and it's not arrogant and it's not pushy and it's not demanding. But obviously there's a whole other set of motivations in us that is demanding and that does camp onto things and does try to rile us up and does, and that's the reason conspiracy theories work. Because the flesh in us can respond to them and say, see, there's evil, those evil people, evil. Those people, you have to fight against those people. Those people are trying to take stuff away from you. Those people are trying to destroy you. You have to fight. You know, because the flesh doesn't really care about which conspiracy theory you're going to latch on to. All it wants to do is keep you stirred up, keep you fearful, keep you envious, keep you greedy, keep you angry, keep you filled with hate. That's all it cares to do. It just wants to keep you stirred up because it knows that's the path to destruction. And so when it hears a conspiracy theory and it goes, oh, that'll work for that person, then it just sticks in the knife and starts going after it, tries to convince you that that's true. Oh, yeah, those people are satanic. You know, because it's playing all the angles. A, it can keep you stirred up. B, when it turns out that it might not be true and then you feel like a fool, then it can accuse you of being a fool. I mean, it's going to work all the angles. All it's going to do, though, is try to keep you in turmoil. And the only antidote is living in the Spirit. And the way to get to living in the Spirit is the same thing that I've been talking about for months. Examining your heart, examining your motive, examining your thoughts. Do they fit inside the boundary? Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.